Alright.
Well, I don't have any slides today. Started putting them together and wasn't quite finding what I was trying to find. So we'll have Kathy's slide. She tells me, I like your titles, but sometimes I don't know what to do with them with the picture. So you got jellyfish today. I said, I like jellyfish. Jellyfish are good. So treat people like they're people, people. To start, I'm going to talk about a story that we probably all know. It's not just a story loved by church people. The parable of the Good Samaritan has lent its name to awards and laws and hospitals and shelters and foundations. You know this story. It starts off with Jesus speaking to a crowd, and somebody wants to know, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, since this was an expert on the law, he says, you know the law, how do you read it? He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You've answered correctly, Jesus said. Do this and you'll live. But he wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? And he tells this story. You know it. A man on the road to Jericho, beaten and robbed. A priest and a Levite go by, passing on the other side without helping. And finally a Samaritan comes by. He stops and helps, dresses the wounds, takes him to an inn, pays for his care. It's a good story. And it's such a captivating and provocative story that it's lent itself to many modern reworkings. You've probably heard some of these, right? Retell the Good Samaritan. And you know, each role is freshly recast with more familiar, relatable faces, right? The priest and the Levite are re-envisioned as a minister, elder, church lady, teacher, lawyer, football captain, principal, cheerleader. You've heard these stories, right? And a Samaritan might not shock anybody today, but updates very nicely to a refugee, gang member, biker, banker, Muslim, homosexual, illegal immigrant. I even found, when I was trying to put together some slides, I found a Minecraft telling of this story called The Good Creeper. And if that doesn't, if you don't know what that is, ask one of the kids. That's what I do. I'll tell you about that. And these stories work. Sometimes when you try to put new faces on parables, it doesn't work so well. It does with the Good Samaritan, I think. These stories work because there's something about the way that we're wired that struggles to acknowledge the good in those whom we're in opposition with, even when we're presented with a clear-cut situation there. We might not refuse to acknowledge it, but it doesn't feel too good either, right? To put praise on some. And so Jesus praising someone like that causes us to confront our tidy world order, and it challenges us to see them from God's perspective. Is it better to be a believer who ignores the needs of others, or a non-believer who shows mercy and kindness? Jesus asks, which of these three do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? And there's only one answer, right? And obviously the ultimate takeaway of this parable is about being a good neighbor and caring about the needs of those around us, Jesus told him, go and do likewise. But if that's the only lesson, why bother bringing the Samaritan into it? He didn't need to complicate it with that. Let's talk a little bit about Samaritans. This is not going to turn into a lecture, I promise. I gave myself one page worth of on this. So a quick rundown of Jewish and Samaritan relations in the time of Jesus. This was more than just a border feud. This was not Michigan versus Ohio State, where the dispute ultimately has more to do with civic pride than anything else. No further comment on that. This is a family feud. Long ago, under Saul and David and Solomon, Israel was one nation. All 12 tribes under one unified kingdom. After Solomon, the nation was split into two separate kingdoms. The southern kingdom took the name of Judah. Its capital was at Jerusalem. Its kings were the descendants of David. The northern kingdom retained the name Israel. It had a separate line of kings, and its capital was at Samaria. These kingdoms recognized their shared heritage and identity, but like so many sibling rivalries, they quarreled with each other and sought to position themselves on more powerful footing among their neighboring nations. And when the Assyrians captured the northern kingdom in 721 BC, but did not overtake Judah, the southern kingdom declared this as clear proof that they were in the right all along, and God had rewarded them for their faithfulness. I mean, how else could you see it, right? At least through their eyes. And when the Babylonians came through about 135 years later and took over both kingdoms, the citizens of Judah went through their own faith crisis, but still retained that sense of superiority over their neighbors to the north. And when the Persians took over about 70 years later and allowed all of the Israelite exiles to return to their homelands, these Jews boasted about not intermarrying with their Babylonian captors, claiming it showed their trust in God that would restore them. They knew it all along. Never had any doubt. I've read some things that say otherwise, but that was what they said. On the other hand, those other people, the ones returning to Samaria, they didn't have the same restraint, they said. They married foreigners and produced mixed descendants. Pay no attention to the fact that they were in exile for 200 years instead of 70. That makes no difference. It doesn't matter how long we were taken away, they said, we wouldn't do what they did. Their actions clearly demonstrated not just moral failure, but insufficient faith and a forfeiture of all of what it means to be one of God's people. At least that's the way they told it in Judah. To the Jews, being a Samaritan wasn't like being a neighbor or even an enemy. You were a half-breed, a half-human in some ways. And in many ways, worse than the Gentiles, because at least the Gentiles knew that they weren't part of the people of God, Samaritans had the audacity to still claim to be a part of Abraham's covenant. Shameful, right? So when a Jew saw a Samaritan, they didn't see a brother or even a neighbor. They saw a less than. Less than faithful, less than acceptable, certainly less than me. And it's really hard to love someone as Jesus calls us to love them if you see them as a less than. But over and over again in our history, we've fallen into this trap of seeing someone different and assuming they must be a less than. Jews and Samaritans. Christians and Jews. Muslims and Christians. Did you know that the U.S. Constitution originally designated a slave as 60% of a person? Legally stated, they're less than a whole person. Andrew Jackson decided that white Americans deserved the land in the southeastern United States more than the Native Americans who lived there. So he made them leave. They're less thans. We were a nation for almost 150 years before we decided women were worthy of voting. We get these ideas in our heads. We stick with them. When they talk about, in many cities, in the name of cleaning up their image, homelessness is declared to be a crime. When they talk about the homeless problem, they don't mean that it's a problem these people don't have homes. They mean it's a problem that they exist. And when you turn someone into a less than, it's so easy to justify dismissive or even cruel treatment. A couple months ago, I shared, when we were talking about the book of Hebrews, I said the worst thing that I ever did, I was in the second and third grade, and we had a nice laugh about that. We talked about, some of us struggle with the "you can never be too bad for Jesus" line. I want to share a little bit about that. Because while it seems silly, and even now there's smirks, first thing he did was in second or third grade, it's still on my mind. And particularly this idea of less thans. May not surprise you to know that I was the little nerdy kid. I got my glasses in kindergarten, and I got my nerd cred around that same time. I wasn't bullied a lot, but there's a pecking order, right? And I was kind of down on the totem pole. But you know who's lower than the nerdy kid? The smelly kid. And there were three kids. One was in my grade, one a year older, and one a year younger. The Williams kids. Dale was in my grade, Susie was a year younger, Tim was a year older. And everybody knew the Williams kids. They fully lived up to the title of the smelly kids. They were the dumb kids. They didn't have friends. And many of us made sure they knew that. And even the nerdy kid was able to recognize that's somebody beneath me. And so when the Williams kids were getting picked on, I joined in. It was fun. It wasn't against me this time. And we did things, like I remember we picked Dale up and put him in a barrel-style trash can and rolled them around the playground at recess time. And I remember one winter, Susie had a very long scarf. Somebody got the idea, we'll tie it around her neck and treat her like a dog. Let her around the playground. And I remember going to get something like a bowl and put rocks in it and put it down so she eat like a dog. And as this went on, I became more bold and thinking it's not just a group thing. I can show that I'm better than them too. And I remember after the dog scene, I remember getting the three of them together and making them all sit and giving them dog commands. And they did it. They were that desperate to have somebody talking to them. I never got in trouble much as a kid, but there was a stretch there that at least once a year I'd have a meeting with principal and my parents about something that I'd done to the Williams kids. And I never really got in trouble for it. Because I remember one time in particular very clearly, my parents were there, Susie was there, the principal was there, and said, "We've heard this happened. What really happened?" And I lied about what happened. I said something much more minor happened, and they turned to Susie, "Is that what happened?" And I can see her face. She very sadly says, "Yeah, that's what happened." When someone is told over and over again that they are worth less than the people who are mistreating them, they start to believe it. It starts to become a part of who they are. Remember the Samaritan woman at the well from John chapter 4? She couldn't understand why Jesus was even talking to her. Doesn't he realize that she's a Samaritan and he's a Jew? Jesus saw past that. He treated her as someone with value, and he changed her life. I failed to do that for the Williams kids. They stopped going to our school after that year when I lied to the principal. And I pray that someone along the way has shown them that they have value, shown them Jesus in a way that I did not. I still think about them. And I don't want to make this all about me. You know, the pulpit can be an easy platform for navel gazing, right? That's not what I want this to be about. But I can tell you that there are many times that I fear that when I die and stand in front of our Savior, the first to speak concerning me won't be my family or my friends from church, but it's going to be Dale and Susie and Tim. And I'll hear, "Whatever you've done to the least of these." It's a sad thing to treat someone like they are less than a person. But unfortunately, there's something in our brains that tells us that we are worth more if we can show that someone is worth less. Less than we are. Do you have anyone you're tempted to feel that way about? We talked about it a little bit in class. Maybe we don't even mean to. People we just treat different. The lawyer who asked Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" couldn't even bring himself to say the name Samaritan in a positive way. I don't know if you ever noticed. When Jesus asked who was the neighbor to the man who was robbed and beaten, he only replied, "The one who showed him mercy." He couldn't even say the Samaritan was the good neighbor. Who would you have a hard time seeing receive praise? Would you be able to hear the parable of the good abortion doctor? How about the good meth addict? How about the feeling when someone comes to your door and says, "I just moved into the neighborhood and I'm required to inform you that I'm a registered sex offender." Who is my neighbor? It's a lot easier when we're talking about Samaritans, right? Treat people like they're people, people. It's usually obvious, and it's usually easy to do. But those times when it's not, those are the times when it really matters. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "You've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemy. Pray for those who persecute you. And in doing so, you will be called the sons and daughters of your Father in heaven." He's the one that makes the rain, makes the sun shine on the righteous and the good, and makes the rain fall on the wicked and the righteous. If you only love those who love you, what good is that? Even the tax collectors do that. And if you only greet your brother and sister, what more are you doing than anyone else? Even the pagans do that. Jesus called us to treat everyone the way we want to be treated, the way we would treat our family, the way we treat our neighbor. It's not easy. Especially the times we don't even realize it's happening. You know, in class this morning, I say, what do we do about this? Especially the times where we don't see it coming and we don't realize it. And someone said, well, maybe just the fact that we're talking about it might get us ready for the next time. I don't know. It's really easy to say, see people the way God sees people, but it's really hard to do. I shared my story this morning. If there's anybody who needs to share theirs, we hold each other up, right? We love. We want to be there for anyone who has even hard things to share. If you have that need, this is a time for that. If this is a time where you need to say, I need to follow Jesus. I need a change in my life. I need baptism. This is a time for that too. If there's anything that anyone needs this morning, please don't be afraid to ask as we stand and sing.
Have thine own way.